Penguin Radio's Poet in Residence position was created in fall of 2014 in collaboration with Dominican's Department of Literature and Languages as a vehicle for creativity and catharsis for budding poets at Dominican. Each semester, one poet is chosen to represent Dominican on the Penguin Radio airwaves and at live performances on campus and across the Bay Area. For profiles and poems by all of our recent poets in residence, go to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu and search poet. This is DJ Noni here at radio.dominican.edu. Today, I am in the studio with our wonderful poet in residence for Penguin Radio. His stage name is 3858, and we affectionately call him Three. Hey, Three, how are you doing this morning?
Better than I have coming. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Welcome to the studio. We're so glad to have you here today.
Thanks. It's always an honor to be asked anything.
Well, I think that it would be great if we could just start straight out of the box with a poem. And what I know that you have ready for us today is one of your poems that you've written called No One Plants Seeds in Concrete. Go for it.
No one plants seeds in concrete or hangs vines of razor wire. No one sires sons to be thrown upon prison pyres. No one molds clay upon the wheel to see it thrown away. No one paints a portrait loved using hues of darkened gray. One knows who grows in stone and steel the truth when told by liars. One knows the pain of loneliness when they've set their world afire. One knows how long a second lasts when nothing's left to say. One knows who grows the gray of ash with no more prayers to pray. The portrait in a mirror, alone, unloved, could have molded another way.
I know about that poem, and I know that you have shared that that's one of the poems that is the most requested when you share it with other folks. What was the inspiration for that poem?
You know, I remember I've been on prison yards where there are men who have no hope of release. And they, you know, it's a graveyard for lifers. And so I watch these men and I think, you know, this was not a part of the plan. Growing up, it seemed like a good idea at the time, maybe, but nobody plans on coming to a penitentiary at the end of days and just looking forward to nothing.
When we were talking before we began the radio show today, we made a plan and I wrote some notes, and I wanted to ask you some questions based on the notes. Can you share with our listeners a little bit, just briefly, the part about this is who I was? Give us a little insight to that past.
Well, I've done crack, heroin, PCP. I've shot up with mechanical pencils, bicycle pump, put stuff in my arm, didn't even have a name, and I would snatch the gold out your mouth with a pair of pliers if it would get me high. And I had no moral issue around that kind of stuff. I've pulled my own, believe me. As I lay down to feast at the banquet of my nightmares, there's no new course your pain and suffering would bring to my table. I made a conscious decision to be dead or in prison by 25. I made that decision when I was 12. And I had thought about it. I didn't rush into it. How do you screw that up? But I did. And I made a decision that I was going to love you. Mm. And so, you know, I'm still working on that. I'm a diamond in the rough.
As are many of us. That's where you were. And you had a mind of where it was going to get you. So It got you, and you did spend some time in prison. When you got there, where were you inside of yourself?
Well, at that particular time, you know, I've been coming in and out of institutions since my preteen years. And I, you know, they kept my brother in a cardboard box in the back of the room. I don't think they're allowed to do that anymore. And we're not talking a microwave box. It was a big box. But I was in the fifth grade, and I remember he brought me into the room, and he showed it to me. And, you know, I mean, I'm just a little kid, but I remember thinking at the time, man, that's kind of weird, man. And so the next year I came into the sixth grade, and they wanted me to get in the box. And I, yeah, no, that's what's not going to happen.
And that's not a metaphorical box.
No, that's a real, it's a real cardboard box. He had a flap cut out, and he had a little chair in there with a radio and a light. And he could open up the flap and kind of mess with the room. But as soon as the teacher started to walk towards the box, as long as he closed the flap and stayed inside, they would never come in. They would leave him alone.
So this experience informed your life, and you went on this path, and you talked about numbing yourself with all of those substances and, you know, stealing a gold tooth out of someone's mouth to pay for the substances.
Well, I snatched my own.
And you snatched your own. So now you end up in prison for that and maybe among other things. And, you know, that was a rough, rough experience.
Well, I mean, I got to admit, you know, when I refused to get in the box, they said, that's okay, we got another institution for you to go into. And I was like, all right, let's get the party started. And I got to tell you, I had a great time. I mean, you could always tell when it was winter in the Tenderloin by my booking photos, because I always had a big grin. It was like, hey, am I too late for a sack lunch? Hey, snap this thing, man. Hey, shoot it. That's where all my friends were. That's where I could get fed and healthy and, you know.
So there was almost relief.
Oh, yeah. You put me in a concrete room. You fill it with angry, potentially violent people. That feeling of being out of place goes away. You shut off light and love, and you will watch me shine like a star in the abyss. There's a difference between comfortable and happy. I can't say that I'm comfortable on campus, but I'm happy.
Hmm. There's some deep going on there. That's pretty heavy to say that going to prison was actually a relief. And so somewhere in there, this poetic part of you was being formed and born. When did you recognize that you had this talent for word and prose and poetry?
Well, I was tested as having a postgraduate vocabulary in the eighth grade. I forget if it was my first or second time in the eighth grade, but I definitely remember it was the eighth grade, which meant I could basically say you in about 50 different ways, 10 of which wouldn't get me suspended, and five, you wouldn't even realize I had given you a you until the ride home when you were gnashing your teeth about how rude I had been. And I structure my words naturally in a poetic manner. And I can tell a story in a compelling way. And people have always told me, I mean, from way back, you know, you should be a writer. And so I came to Dominican University not to be a writer, but just so that I could, you know, pound nails in rusty wood at the end of days, telling myself I tried and it just didn't work out.
Here we are at radio.dominican.edu. This is DJ Noni back here with our poet in residence, 3. I know that you have another poem to share. Are you ready for that? And can you read us your poem, Waiting?
Sure. Waiting. If death be a thief in the night, then time the getaway driver. As the hairpin turn of tomorrow looms, unknown, unseen, but near. Mistakes pass, missed opportunities, crying out rhythmic markers. Scarring windshield eyes with flies of lies and a downpour scream of tears. Let the thief have his due for what is left on the curb of the soul. As if some beggar with a bowl cannot rightly be called stolen, only waiting time. And journeys end when solace blooms from still and silence. As memories of those past pained along the way, wail no more to hold them. If time be the getaway driver, who be the mastermind? God? A God, the God, your God, mine? Enoch, Isaiah, Muhammad, notwithstanding, chariot, whirlwind, steed, oh, to bleed no life upon the pavement. Think they made it? Maybe. Will you? I don't know. Though, what are the odds? Road has no driver, bringing thief to pick up point. As if mastermind told time to temper and death slow you roll. What are the odds you get off this smoldering coal hole? That's the plan, mount curb, watch death and time pass, destination marker made of skin and bone. I don't know, but I've got mine. I suggest you get your bowl.
Time be the getaway driver. If someone had no idea of your backstory and your experience, and they heard this poem for the first time, and they asked you what your inspiration for it was, and how you came to create it, what would you say?
Well, I got a D in poetry. This stuff don't rhyme. And I was informed that it's not Limerick 101. It's poetry. And so there were a whole lot of elements to this craft that I did not understand. And an instructor by the name of Carlos really took pity on me. And he gave me some extracurricular activities and some literature and books and worksheets, and I began to try and wrap my brain around what it is that we're doing here in this field. And so this was the first assignment. And during the summer, I spent, well over 40 hours, probably closer to 80, just on this. And I rewrote this in Shakespearean stanza. This is the finished product, because this is how I want it read when somebody reads it. But I have reconstructed this using iambic pentameters and began to wrap my brain around the elements of the craft. And one of the things that I notice is that there are definitions to what I do. There's a book of forms and definitions, and I didn't know that. And so I'm proud of this one simply because it's like I spent so much time on it.
It sounds like where you've come has opened up and renewed you in a sense, and you've had this poetic part of who you are, but coming to Dominican University of California and becoming a college student has opened up a new vista, a new vision for you, and you're getting to put real names on things, real techniques on things that you've already been doing, and just channeling your art.
Yeah, when my father took me out of the Tenderloin, we didn't have a word called intervention back in those days. It was a voluntary kidnapping under false pretenses, and he had some plan that involved me not injecting massive amounts of methamphetamine. And I was like, that's what's not going to happen. So just give me a ride back. And he wouldn't do it. So I'm stuck in Marin County. I don't even really know. I can't see the Transamerica building. I can't even see the bridge. So I have no idea where I'm at. And I remember walking through Dominican University for the first time. And I had never seen anything this beautiful. Or safe. Even the deer weren't scared of me. And I've only walked through this institution twice and never on the sidewalk because I just felt too unclean. And coming here, if somebody had told me 15 years ago, you're going to be an upper division English major at Dominican University, I would have said, yeah, as soon as I'm done with this unicorn ride through this field of soap bubbles, I'll tell you what, I'll meet you there.
There was a time in your life that there was little to no hope.
Yeah, I had made a conscious decision. And so these things, I never considered myself to be a prisoner. I was a volunteer. I remember the first time I sat in front of a cop. I had a Grand Theft Auto and breaking and entering. I was 13 years old, not that big of a deal, but they were felonies and they were gonna stick. And the first question out of his mouth, he said, you got any scars? I said, yeah, I got one right here. He says, you got any tattoos? And and he's typing all this information in, and I looked at that and I knew there's a reason he's asking these questions. There's a purpose for him typing this information in. So when he asked me if I had any tattoos, I said no, and I thought, and I'm never going to either. That's how you track us. I never aspired to be a convict. I just knew that's where it was going. Like blisters on the foot of a runner. Man, if you didn't see that coming, you never should have bought the shoes, homie, much less put foot to path.
Your life, as hard as it was, and as hard as it is to change out of that, was consciously formed, it sounds like.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I didn't wind up one day wondering how I got where I was at. And even those times when I would be handcuffed, beat, left bloody on a floor, that was the result of a path I had chosen. And so it's not that a human being has that coming. It's just I put myself in a position where, this is a part of the decision that you made.
When did it shift for you? Because one of the things I was thinking about when we were preparing for our interview is, you know, here you are now in front of everybody, changing, loving, living, you know, yourself, you know, your friends and family and your life. When did you make the conscious shift to move from those old boxes and institutions to this other institution? Dominican is an institution. It's a different formation. How did you make that shift, and when did you make that shift?
I had my son's name picked out when I was 12 years old. Some of my earliest memories are of my son, what he was going to look like, what he was going to be like. And I spent a year out here in the 7th grade, Marin County. That's how I knew about this place. And I thought, man, if I ever have a kid, I'm going to raise him here. And that's what I did. But the problem is I came with him. And so I had chosen a lifestyle that was not conducive to being a parent. And I had to make a decision on whether I was going to be a father or who I am. And I picked my son, which meant I had to deconstruct everything there was about me and reconstitute basically another human being. I love my son, but he could not go where I was going. And, I was making decisions based on me, not us.
When that shift happened, was it sudden or was it slow and a slow change? And when was it that you did end up coming to Dominican?
Well, I remembered, I came out of my room one day and, my house looked like a scene out of Saving Private Ryan. I mean, I had saturated my life with toss-ups, tweakers, mainline gangbangers, and textbook psychopaths straight out of the nightmare sections of the DSM-5. And I thought, I never took my son to the Tenderloin with me. I've recreated it in his living room. And what kind of a man does that? It doesn't make me bad people. It just made me less than a father. And any way you stack that, it made me a fraction of a man. And I knew one of these days, either he's going to pull up a chair and he's going to throw in on a fat sack or a six pack, or at best, I'm going to drag him down the hole I'm digging and make him watch me die. Because who did I have around me that would care enough about him to send him out of the room or draw the action away to make sure he don't see things like that? And so, I just looked at him and I said, I love you, son. You got to go. I couldn't stop. I could not stop being who I was. And then I had an opportunity to reset by grace, not because I'm smarter than the average bear. And I thought, okay, let me try. It's not that I thought it was going to work. I mean, I really did think there was no way I could change. I went to my father and some of his friends who had found a way out, and they would talk to me about how to become the person that I aspired to be. And there is a constant war that is raging every day between the man that I was and the one that I want to be, and somewhere in the middle is me. And so every day, you know, I wake up with an opportunity to shine, and I try my best.
When that opportunity to reset came to you, how did it float into your life? And what did you do? What action did you take? When you had that moment of reset, what action did you take?
Well, my son, I had a white Ford with little shiny hubcaps pull up to my house, and I knew I was the one in trouble because my son was in the front seat, not the back. He's about maybe 8 years old, 7, 8 years old. So he gets out. He doesn't have a firearm. So, okay, CPS. And he told my kid to get in the house, and he starts in on me. I said, whoa, pump the brakes, man. You knock on my door because you have to, not because you're polite. If you had what you needed, you wouldn't be trying to have a conversation with me right now. So the fact that you're trying to talk to me automatically demonstrates you don't have what you need. So why don't you run your little narrow ass down the street and try and scare somebody else? And I walked in my house, and I knew one of these days he's not going to knock. He's going to show up to my house with a crew. He's going to kick this door in, and he's going to take my son. There's nothing I can do about it. So I made a decision. I got a hold of some people who had made the same decision, who had gone through the same process I had, and yet they got to the other side. And they had to completely divest themselves of everyone and everything that they had around them. And so I had people that loved me, and they're loyal. Loyal as a pit bull, but I had to let them go. You know, it's like my road dog, which is a friend who has transcended to somebody who is in your corner, on your side, down to ride, good, bad, right, wrong, or indifferent. And I had to let him go. And that was hard. You know, he can make me laugh harder than anybody on this planet, but if we pull up to a stop sign and he doesn't like what he sees, 200 witnesses, broad daylight, he's not going to hesitate. And so I can't be around people like that. Not and have my son.
So when that reset came, you really had a clear vision. And as challenging and incredibly difficult, you just turned your head the other way and started walking toward the light.
Yeah. And you know, again, these decisions came with consequences and rewards. And so I can't say that, you know, there's no downside to this. You know, there's a reason people looked at me like I was an animal, because the only thing I saw when I saw them was food. And so, you know, I don't have to try and be your friend. You're not my buddy. I'm not trying to get along. But as a result, I get to structure my life any way I want to. And I will pound the square peg of my agenda into the round hole of your obstinacy.
To get
if
there,
I have
to get
yeah.
there. Yeah. This is DJ Noni, radio.dominican.edu, back here with our poet in residence, 3. So I want to finish out our interview with one final poem, but I want to get to that gem of the moment. And it isn't necessarily about Dominican University of California, but it's about that moment that you knew that you had done the reset, that you'd turn and face the light, and you stepped into the next place when you stepped onto the campus and things were, you know, happening for you all of a sudden in a good way. Tell me about that moment.
3 days after I got out of prison, I filed my FAFSA. And within a business week, I was on campus full time. Ball head, goatee down on my chest, prison sweats, white tennis shoes, straight Charles Manson yearbook look. And I got to the point where, you know, College of Marin let me know, we don't know where you're going, but you can't stay here. You've maxed out your units. And I circled Dominican University like a shark For weeks, I couldn't come in. One person's territory is another person's terror. Now, I drove myself to prison. I left $5 in the keys under the floorboard for a buddy of mine. I got no issue with it, you know? You know, I've been terrified. This transcended terror. I couldn't articulate how much fear there was. And so I talked to people who were used to this kind of life. And they said, why don't you just park your car? And so that's where I did. That's where it started. I just brought my car and parked it on the dirt. And then was like, well, why don't you go into a building? And, you know, coming here was a process. And I still, like I said, I can't say I'm comfortable here. I went through the windshield of the world that you see. And what I saw on the other side broke me like coal. It's just incidents like that that caused me to see the world in a different way. But I want to see it from your angle. I want to be a better human being. I'm trying, you know?
And that is the process. There is the process. It isn't going to be all roses and rainbows and unicorns with soap bubbles.
Right.
But you've actively pursued it. And even though there is discomfort, you are embracing whatever it is that you can to keep going forward.
Yeah. You know, and I thought college was going to be some arduous process I had to go through to reach a goal. I told my son the difference between going to high school and going to college is the difference between working at Disneyland and going to Disneyland. I mean, I cannot believe the experience that I've had here. It's like Epicurean philosophy and Plato. I had heard of Plato, but nobody really expounded upon Socratic theorems in the trailer park. And so, you know, and now I get to like really delve into this and just so many different things, man, that, I mean, every day is a gift. I don't want to get all misty, but I mean, I walk around here every day, just cannot believe guys like me don't get to places like this, that we just don't, you know?
And you're here and you can believe it.
Yeah.
You're here and you can believe it.
Like I said, this, you know, I am never nervous in front of crowds. Public speaking doesn't really faze me. It's not a deposition. You people got nothing on me anyway. But when I'm here, it's this place is too important. Every step I take here is a cognizant effort to get to the other one. And so I just really don't want to screw this thing up. No one in my family has ever gotten a degree. You know, my old man only made it to the 8th grade, and that doesn't sound like a whole lot, but that was 8 more than his old man. Everybody in my family goes to prison. The bar is set pretty low for us in my family, and so for me to get a bachelor's degree would make me a hereditary singularity, you know? Huh? I'm close.
Go, man. You can do it.
Right.
Right on. Well, I'm so thankful that you've been here today, and what I'd like to do is have you end our time together with your poem. And if you're just tuning in, this is DJ Noni here on Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu. I'm interviewing our poet in residence, 3858, and we like to affectionately call him 3. So as we close out today's time, 3 is going to share his poem, The Whitman of West Block. Go 3.
13 windows look down. 13 steps lead up. 13 bars. 1,000 angry men cry in vain. Whitman promised 1,000,000 sons more. A world within a world dedicated to severance. And so it shall be in the end of days that an angel of the Lord shall step forward and sever the wicked from the just. And cast them into a furnace of fire, and there shall be a great wailing and gnashing of teeth. I want Whitman's world. I want sons. Millions of sons. More. Bars. 30-foot steel doors. Forged. To withstand the pounding of 1,000 angry men. Descend. Down deep into the wailing. Walk amongst the gnashing teeth, beneath the world of Whitman's stars, behind 13 bars, transcend with me, Peter Pan style. Close your eyes. Ignore the tears. Fear not, for I am with you.
Three, thank you once again for coming on to Penguin Radio, radio.dominican.edu.
It's always an honor. Thank you.
For profiles and poems by all of our recent poets in residence, go to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu and search poet. Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu is brought to you by Dominican School of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences, where our dean is Dr. Laura Stivers, and our Communication and Media Studies chairperson is Brad Van Alstein. Our Penguin Radio executive director is Stuart Horn, and I'm Leona George Davidson as your host, DJ Noni, and also our managing director here at Penguin Radio. Thanks for listening.